Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back. Glad you're with us, and we've got a good show lined up for you. I know I say that all the time, but doggone it, I mean it. This is all really important subjects we cover on this program, and I'm sure you agree. There are several things in the news that we came across that Beth Moodhart, my office, does an outstanding job of finding wonderful guests and very interesting subjects. I do provide a little, my 2 cents worth here and there, but anyway, we found some really interesting things. And we found them from a returning guest, Ann Turgeson, journalist for the Wall Street Journal and the Encore section. And she writes a blog. You can check that out at marketwatch.com. We've got 4 good subjects to talk about today. Healthcare, your retirement investment accounts, also how to keep working and how to get away with it and how to make everybody feel good about it. And then also a very interesting concept about internships for older workers. So those are the topics. Now, the guest, Ann Turgeson, I need to reintroduce her for those of you that haven't heard her on our program before. She writes about retirement for the Wall Street Journal. What do you know? Imagine having her on this program to talk about that. And she has been widely recognized, accolades all over the place. She has been working with the Wall Street Journal. She's also worked for Business Week magazine. A lot of coverage in the personal financial section. So we're real pleased to have her. Ann, welcome back.
Thanks very much for having me.
You're very welcome. I will be happy to introduce you anytime. Okay, so listen, let's dig in. There's some really interesting writings you've been getting out there, a couple of recent ones that I thought were really interesting. And a couple of them are not necessarily good news, if you will, but I guess the key message for our listeners is going to be know that these issues are out there and we can prepare for them better. The first one I want to talk about, if we can, is the grim news that you wrote about on healthcare costs in retirement back in March 26. So there was a study or analysis done, and I'll let you share this with our listeners because these numbers are really staggering, and it begs the first thing I think of, Ann, is how do we address this? So set it up for us. What are the findings, and just how grim is the news?
Okay, sure. So it's a study done by a company that provides retirement healthcare cost data. It looks at a 66-year-old couple who are retiring this year with an average Social Security benefit, and it looks at, over the course of a 30-year retirement, how much of their Social Security benefits will be consumed by medical costs. And the projection for this year is 67% of that average Social Security benefit check will be lost. Well, will be devoted to healthcare costs.
So, sure.
It's sort of a reminder to people that because of the rising cost of medical care, their Social Security. Everybody kind of thinks, well, the Social Security will cover, food or housing or some of their fixed costs and hopefully all of their fixed costs. But in fact, when you factor medical costs into the equation, that becomes kind of a difficult thing to work out.
It almost feels like, that it's being given to you in one hand and taken away with the other hand.
Yeah. There is that feeling about it.
Especially when you've got Medicare Part B premiums being deducted from your Social Security, and then you have the cost of the care, and then you're factoring in other things that may not even be covered by Medicare as well, right?
Exactly. Well, a lot of people assume that Medicare covers everything, and in fact, that's just not true. I mean, it's just like private, employer-based insurance where you go to the doctor and you pay a copay, and there probably is a deductible. I mean, these things happen with Medicare, too. And you also have the cost of your premiums. So, in fact, there is a cost to Medicare, even for people who've paid into the system for years. So those are the costs that need to be accounted for going forward. A lot of people purchase Medicare supplement insurance to cover things that Medicare doesn't cover, including copays and deductibles and costs that for services that Medicare doesn't cover, like dental insurance or vision. But those policies, you have to pay premiums on them as well.
Yeah, so all these are things that are costs that are going to come out of your Social Security cash flow. And of course, this is another reason why people, if they can, put off taking Social Security until they are at least normal retirement age or at least Medicare age. And because if you take that permanent reduction, and then, of course, on top of that, you have a lower inflation rate for Social Security. But as we all know, healthcare is still, despite all the efforts that have been made, welcome and unwelcome efforts made to try to clamp down on the rising cost of healthcare, it still keeps going up double or more of the regular inflation rate.
Exactly. Well, that's the reason why they're projecting in the future that if you look at a 55-year-old couple who's going to retire in 10 years, this company is expecting that they will devote about 90% of their lifetime Social Security benefits to healthcare costs. And the reason why is because Social Security benefits grow by the regular inflation rate, and that's been about 2% a year, versus medical costs, which are growing by 5 to 7% a year in this calculation.
Okay. One other quick question that we'll talk about, is there any solution for this? Is long-term care, cost of nursing, assisted living, home health care, any of that factored into these numbers?
No. So,
wow.
Unfortunately.
Wow.
And that's a cost that for many people isn't going to necessarily amount to much, maybe, a year or two. But for people who are unlucky, that can be a really, really high cost. It's going to be high for even people who need it for a year or two. But no, that's not included.
Okay. Well, then now we're over probably for the people that, and of course, this affects 2/3 of people over 65, as you know, Anne, I'm sure you've seen those statistics, that you factor that in, you've used up all your Social Security. So the solution, or maybe the grim reality or brutal reality, is that if Social Security is going to be your primary source of income in retirement, we better start working on some other ideas and again, at least if possible, be realistic about how long you can work. I mean, work to 65, 66, maybe 70 if you can do it, especially with the longer life expectancies.
Yeah, and for people who can do it, who still have time to save, then this should definitely factor into the equation of how much you need to save.
Well, I've already told all my employees, Anne, that they can't retire until they're 70, so...
You're all set.
You know that went over real well, right?
I'm sure.
I'm going to use your study. Hey, listen, you can't retire. I need you. And by the way, if you retire, it's going to get eaten up by all these healthcare expenses. So you need to work. Well, I tell you what, it's beyond my tongue-in-cheek solution here. Are there any other solutions that you're hearing that are out on the the frontier of higher intellectual thought by some of the people that are supposed to know how to solve these problems? I mean, is there any ideas? I'm scratching my head and going, work longer and save more. What else is there?
Well, for people who have higher incomes, there are other strategies that they can use. That's because when your income exceeds a certain threshold, which is $85,000 for single people and $170,000 for couples, then you're actually going to be paying more for your Medicare Part B premiums and your Medicare Part D premiums, which cover prescription drugs. So it's a good idea. I mean, and that in turn, that will add to your medical costs, which are obviously going to be taking away more and more of your Social Security. So it's a good idea to try to avoid paying those premiums. And one way to do it is to put money into a Roth IRA, because when you take
shelter.
When you take money out of a Roth IRA, it's not counted towards your modified adjusted gross income, and that's the number that is used to calculate what your Medicare premiums are going to be. So if you can keep that modified adjusted gross income below those thresholds, then you can save yourself some money in terms of higher premiums for Medicare.
That's a brutal reality, and I think the big word here is planning ahead.
Yeah, and I should mention that health savings accounts have the same treatment as Roth IRAs, so you can use either of those vehicles to sort of make those plans if you are in a higher income bracket.
Tax deferral, tax minimization, put it off some point in the future and try to maintain your eligibility for these benefits and not even, and it, of course, maintain the deductibility of your healthcare expenses, because once you get above a certain level of income also, and you start losing some of your deductions, yippee, hooray!
Right. So it becomes pretty complicated, but that's something, again, for higher income people to worry about.
Well, this is where we put the appropriate asterisk in the conversation, that consult your tax advisor regarding the strategies discussed on this program.
Definitely.
Okay, Ed. Well, good. Well, I'm glad we're on the same page there. If you're just joining us, Ann Turgeson's our guest journalist for the Wall Street Journal, and she writes in the Encore section, which is very cool, and you can check out the blog, marketwatch.com. We'll grab a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about another couple of three important subjects with Ann. Stay right there.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your financial portfolio prepared for such a correction? What about inflation? What's your plan when that gallon of milk or gallon of gasoline costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has all the answers to questions like these and practical steps to help you hedge against these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland.
And we're back. Ann Turgeson on the line. And, you know, Ann, people got to know these problems, these challenges that are out there. And, you know, one of the solutions we talked about with regard to the rising cost of healthcare and how maybe that sucks up a lot of your Social Security income. My very basic solution was to save more, work longer, and part of saving more means don't be pulling on your retirement accounts before you retire, and that's the subject of your March 12th article. And again, those of you just joining us, Ann Turgeson on the line, journalist for the Wall Street Journal. And, you know, is this a growing trend, or was this something we've seen at different points, like with the market, the big market great recession of 2008, or is this a growing trend that we're seeing that people are taking money when they switch jobs or just getting access to it to spend before retirement?
Well, I think it's always been a problem during recessionary periods. I believe that the numbers increase for
that sounds reasonable,
reasons.
Yeah. So it's not only during recessions, but this is something when people change jobs as well.
Oh, definitely. And that's always been a big problem, this so-called cash out, so that when you change jobs, you're all of a sudden given access to your retirement funds. And a lot of people roll those funds over, meaning that they transfer them to either an IRA or to a 401k at a new employer, which is what you really should do because you want to maintain that tax deferral. But it's awfully tempting to some people to, you know, say, okay, I'll just cash that 401k out, which involves paying a 10% penalty if you're younger than 59 and a half, and it also involves paying income taxes on the entire amount. So there's just this substantial amount that you lose to the government by doing that, but you know it's a windfall. It's windfall cash, and a lot of people really can't help themselves, and they do it, and particularly when balances are relatively small.
They think, what's the big deal?
Yeah, people right. just think, oh, you know, that's hardly anything. That's not going to finance my retirement. I'll just take it and buy a new car or something.
Yeah, and if they do that each time they change jobs, which the average worker today changes jobs, what, 7 to 10 times during their career now?
Mm-hmm.
And you take all those little bites of that same apple that could have stayed, worked, grown, tax deferred, compound growth, dollar cost averaging, all that good stuff, and could really be worth something.
Exactly. I mean, even small sums saved, you know, when you're young can really build over time. So you really have to think twice before doing that.
Well, so, you know, we can give people the benefit of this knowledge, and that, this, you know, don't do that. And this is something that needs to be part of your retirement. Are there any external attempts to try to rein this in by either the government or employers or a combination of that? And if so, is that a bit big brother?
Yeah, you know, I there's always been discussion of this, and there are a lot of people in Washington, a lot of policymakers, who favor cutting down on the number, on the situations in which people are permitted to gain access to their 401k balances. Some people feel that we should just not allow cash outs at all upon changing jobs. 401k loans are another form of what they call leakage, when money can just kind of come out of these accounts. Loans themselves aren't bad, but if they're not repaid, that's when the government deems the amount you took a distribution and, again, charges that 10% penalty plus income tax, and the money's just out of the account. So a lot of people are in favor of reducing loans, but in fact, it seems like these initiatives really never gather much momentum. And the big reason is because people are afraid that if employees cannot get access to the retirement savings, that they're not going to put money in to begin with.
Yeah, the cure may be worse than a disease.
Yeah, it could really discourage people from saving.
Well, I can tell you, Anne, that when I work with somebody that's making a job transition and they've got the opportunity to get access to that money from the 401k, you know, a lot of times we'll say, look, let's look at where you're headed, and maybe you've got a lot more choices or more appropriate choices with an IRA, rolling those funds into the IRA as opposed to rolling it into the successor employer. And again, that latitude lets each person kind of figure out what's best for them. But, you know, on the other hand, I can see the challenge of getting, because if people aren't saving for themselves, we, of course, as a country, realize that if they don't save for themselves, and that's why all these plans have the tax benefits they have, is to get people to save for themselves. If they don't, then what's left? It's going to then be some sort of governmental assistance that may be required.
Right, which
means we pay for it as taxpayers.
Right. So, you know, trying to get people to save in these accounts, the feeling is that you have to give them some kind of flexibility to get access to the money under certain conditions, and that's those conditions which, you know, people debate as to what would be an appropriate condition or not.
Yeah, and that's of course, where the rubber meets the pavement. It's a challenge. You know what they could do is the government could match our 401k contributions. That would get everybody pumped up, wouldn't it?
I guess they could.
If you like your 401k plan, you can keep your 401k plan.
Yes.
It's good stuff, Ann. I like it. All right. Well, let's grab another quick break. We'll come right back with Ann Turgeson, journalist for the Wall Street Journal in the Encore section. And you can check out marketwatch.com for blogs and great information that Ann's putting there. And we've got a couple more interesting topics to get to. One of them, very interesting, internships for older workers and how that might potentially reintegrate people that have taken some time off and get them back into the workforce. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for convenient, straightforward financial information? Just say no to superficial sales presentations. And yes to the free Real Money app. Get David Holland's new app for your smartphone or tablet. Just search Real Money with David Holland at your mobile device's store. You'll be able to access 17 educational TV shows, plus hundreds of radio shows and financial columns, all in the palm of your hand and on your schedule. So very easy and so very important to you. Again, to download the free app, search Real Money with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back. Encore, Encore, Encore. That's where you can find Ann Turgeson's great work and writing, Wall Street Journal. And glad to have her back. Let's hit a couple more topics, Ann, if we can. The other one that was really interesting to me that you had written about back in March 3rd was this move toward the internship for older workers. So tell us what's happening here. This is really kind of an interesting idea, and I think certainly worth exploring for people wanting to get back into the workforce and for companies to maybe, you know, get that introduction to maybe some of these people who can really add value to their businesses.
Yeah, I thought it was a really cool idea that in particular financial service companies, but I'm sure this exists in other fields as well, and actually does exist in the legal field. So it started because British bank Barclays had recently announced plans to launch an internship program in the UK for what they were calling mature workers. And they don't have like a particular age in mind, but they do have an internship program for younger workers, for people who are 16 to 24. It's what they call an apprenticeship program, and it involves, you know, jobs and branches and sort of training younger people. And so somewhere along the line, somebody at the bank thought, well, why not open that type of opportunity up to people who are older than that, who, you know, given the economy, may have been out of work for a while and may really be looking for an opportunity to retrain in a different field and to find a way back into the workforce. So that was one example, which I thought was really interesting. And unfortunately for Americans, even though Barclays is here, they don't have plans to bring this program to the U.S. at the moment. But there are several other financial services companies, including J.P. Morgan, Chase, Goldman Sachs, MetLife, Morgan Stanley, and they have programs that are aimed at bringing. There's generally sort of short-term programs, maybe 10 weeks, maybe, you know, a couple months, 3 months, and they're aimed at attracting people who maybe have left the workforce, perhaps to care for young children or aging parents or for whatever reason, but who want to kind of jumpstart their careers and who are very well-qualified people. And so these programs are intended to sort of welcome them back and offer some fodder for their resumes. In many cases, actually, the companies do hire these people.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Is this end up being kind of an introduction for both parties and allow them to get the person who's been out of the workforce back integrated and get comfortable and maybe get up to speed and, you know, get back into the swing of things with the current technologies and then give the employer a chance to really, you know, evaluate that person as a potential hire.
Exactly. So in some ways, it's sort of a less risky way for them to hire people. And I can't remember which company it was. I think maybe Goldman Sachs. There's a statistic that they hire about half of the people who go through this program. And the salaries, I mean, as you can imagine, when you're talking about Wall Street investment banks, the salaries can be pretty high and certainly competitive according to the employers. There's a program called On-Ramp Fellowships, which is really for women, and it's for women who are lawyers, and they place people in law firms, about 15 law firms, and the salaries there are about, I believe, over $100,000,
wow.
$125,000 a year, which, you know, depending on your level of experience as a lawyer, may or may not seem like a lot, but, you know, it's not sort of your typical internship, unpaid internship. So
yeah, that's very robust opportunity. Well, let's flip it around. Let's talk about next, and the person that has been rejoined or has been in the workforce for a long time. And this was the subject of your Eyes of March, March 15th article, blog about a guide to not retiring. And so people staying in the workforce, you know, there's a certain expectation, of course, in our country and in culture that, you know, you reach a certain age, you're supposed to be going to greener pastures. You're supposed to, you know, ride west. You're supposed to do something else. And so not only for that cultural expectation, but also the practicalities of people working longer and also for the company and coworkers and family. There's a lot of dynamics here for the person that wants to or chooses to work longer in their employment.
Exactly. And I mean, if you look at the statistics, it's pretty clear that people are working longer. They're choosing, often choosing to work longer. You know, for some people, it may be driven primarily by economic necessity. But when you speak to economists, when they look at the figures, that first of all, they're noticing that people are staying in the workforce longer. They're delaying retirement, even as the economy's been recovering. And I think, you know, some of it certainly is financially driven, but a lot of it, they're looking at people who are in service professions, say legal profession, banking, accounting, that kind of thing. And they, you know, these are white collar jobs that are fairly high paid, and they don't require manual labor, so there's no reason why you have to retire
right,
at a certain
right.
age. So a lot of people in those jobs are sort of saying, hey, wait a second, you know, provided my employer allows me to stick around, I'd really kind of like to stick around.
Hey, you know, white collar job, you got that, and you're able to, I mean, my plan is to work to 70, Ann, and I, you know, hey, look, I got air conditioning. It's comfortable. Okay. I mean,
there's no reason why not.
Why not? Right. And I mean, I enjoy it. I like what I do. And why not? Why not? I mean, why not do that? And, you know, this is all shifting, of course, with longevities, lengthening, and of course, as you said, the financial need. I think there's also a little bit of skittishness among the public, having had just that fresh Great Recession back in 08, 09, that, you know, not soon to be forgotten, that, you know what, I've got a job, I need to rebuild my retirement, I got to build these assets back up. But even if those are built back up, there's still, I think, a natural, understandable concern that, you know, this could happen again. there could, I'm just going to, I got a good deal, I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I also think that employers, even though, you know, there is age discrimination, there's no question about that. But I think, you know, the most progressive employers are kind of waking up to the fact that the demographics kind of make it worth their while to try to hold on to older employees who perform well and who have a lot of knowledge of the company.
Oh, amen. I mean, that's your you know, that's your nest egg. That's the, for the business, that's the intellectual property. That's your horsepower. That's your working engine, the knowledge of your team. And, you know, you talk about discrimination, you know, I've had somebody come to me and they fit what I was looking for. I don't care how old they are, as long as I think in my mind, you know, that they can do the task. And I kind of think in terms of 5 and 10 year plans. So, you know, that's in this day and age, that's a good run for an employee.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of people are deciding they want to stay put. So the question then becomes, you know, particularly as you're approaching what would normally be considered retirement ages, do you just sort of continue doing what you've been doing, or do you have to somehow kind of signal your intentions or even be more explicit about your intentions?
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't want anybody making assumptions about what your plans are.
Exactly. And I spoke to a number of people who are just working, you know, flat out. They're really loving what they're doing. Working long hours and really enjoying it and feel like they're really making a difference. And yet they get questions from colleagues saying, so what are your retirement plans? And this is really kind of surprising to them. So I think it just kind of shows how pervasive that expectation is. And if you want to hang out, if you want to not really hang out, but if you want to hang on to your job longer, these are expectations that you need to take into account. You need to tell people.
Yeah, well, buy the retirement clock, but set it for 5 years out so people stop asking you, and put it on the wall in your cubicle or your office, right?
I guess that's a very
good
way to do it. Yeah, I mean, you can also, during your performance review, you can also make it clear. And certainly when colleagues ask, there's, you know, plenty of room to sort of, on an informal basis,
let people know.
Yeah.
Ann Turgeson, ladies and gentlemen, join us for the Wall Street Journal and the Encore section. MarketWatch.com is a blog about retirement. Ann, you're great. Love having you on. We'll have you back.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.